Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 135 of Nerd Pride Radio. 135 is the distance in miles of the Badwater Ultra Marathon Foot Race. Thank you, Ronster. Ronster quotes from Wikipedia for me. The Badwater Ultra Marathon describes itself as the world's toughest foot race, a 135-mile course starting at 279 feet below sea level in the Badwater Basin in California's Death Valley and ending at an elevation of 8,360 feet at the Whitney Portal trailhead to Mount Whitney. Holy crap. It takes place annually in mid-July when the weather conditions are most extreme and temperatures over 120 degrees Fahrenheit, even in the shade, are not uncommon. Consequently, very few people, even among ultra-marathoners, are capable of finishing this grueling race. That is the most horrifying sounding thing I've ever heard. I can't even imagine it. Thank you, Ronster, for saving me all that horrible, horrible research. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week is Zaphod Beeblebrox, because, you know, he's running for president. Why not? Right. Thank you again, Ronster. All right. What do I got today? You know what? We are going to go straight into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. I don't have a whole lot, but what I do, I'm probably going to read straight out of my notebook here. So let's get right into it. The meticulously plotted portion of the podcast is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, and it has been, I add it to my master list, usually in my handy-dandy pocket mod, but now in my little mini composition notebook. The best stuff off of this list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And first up is my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. And this week's gaming table comes directly from a brand new listener to the podcast who calls himself Irish Fan, which logic would tell me, since I know he's into fantasy sports leagues, the fantasy movie league, other stuff like that. I'm guessing that means he's a fan of the Fightin' Irish, but it could also mean that he's just Irish and happens to be a huge fan of this podcast. And that's what I'm going to choose to believe. I can do whatever I want. It's my reality. Irish Fan, sent me, immediately. I mean, he sent me like 10, 11, Podomatics already. I've got them all in the list. Hopefully we'll get to one of those today. But the very first one he sent me was striking enough that I decided that I would just make it a whole segment here. He says, role-playing games. I don't get it. Brief bio, I think, is in order. This is from him. He says he's new to Nerd Pride Radio, but we have much in common. We are around the same age, 46 years old. He also has four boys, as I do, but he started with a girl, So he says, I've one-upped you there. I grew up on video and board games, so I still consider myself a gamer. However, the board games are primarily of the traditional variety. Your podcast has interested me in expanding mine and my boy's horizon on the game front. I just purchased the Marvel edition of Munchkin. I haven't played that one, by the way. I would be fascinated to try. Because I've done regular Munchkin. I've done Space Munchkin. We've got Zombie Munchkin. There's probably two other versions that we've got. Pathfinder Munchkin is pretty good. And in general, because we have so many regular Munchkin cards, we just keep going back to regular Munchkin. But every now and then we'll break out one of the other ones because they're all fun. Oh, Adventure Time Munchkin. That's actually my boys' favorite one. Anyway, back to Irish fans' email to me. So he says, but back on point, as I said, I do not understand how exactly the role-playing games work. Great question. Is there one person that runs the game who essentially makes the game up as you go? Are there delineated rules, or are they made up by the master as well? Have you ever considered doing a special podcast for us uber newbies explaining the ins and outs of role-playing games, a sort of RPG 101 that anyone could pull up for advice or consultation? I don't know if I've ever actually done that before, but I don't mind answering your question right now. And I'm kind of working off the top of my head, so it may be a little bit disjointed, but for the most part, I think I can keep this together. Here's the deal. The most straightforward version of role-playing games, the traditional role-playing game, if you want to differentiate them from video game RPGs, because video games have co-opted that term, these are designated as pen and paper RPGs or tabletop RPGs, either way. But it's a role-playing game that you play generally face-to-face with friends, although I play a lot of them online. But the point of it is that the mechanics of it, the rules and the randomization and the stuff that goes on, is all handled by people working together to tell a story, as opposed to like a video game where the computer handles all the details of that. And the most straightforward version, it is a shared storytelling game that involves, as you rightly surmised, a game master, originally the dungeon master from Dungeons & Dragons, but a game master who designs the plot, designs the world, puts together the story that's going to be told, or at least the bare bones of it. And then everyone else at the table plays a character in that story. And essentially, you just tell the story. The characters, the people playing their characters, they say, well, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. And it can be, I mean, anything. This is what makes it different from video game, is that it is wide open. You can do absolutely anything you want. Anything that your character reasonably could make an attempt at accomplishing, no matter how stupid it may sound, no matter how unrealistic their chances of doing it, you can try, you know.
If you can dream it, it is possible.
Thank you, Aiden. Yes. And so then what happens is the game master, who knows what all the background is, who all the bit players are, and what the plot behind the scenes is, and what else is going on, the game master then tells you how the world reacts to your actions. So currently we're playing our big game of Pathfinder, which is a Dungeons & Dragons spinoff. And in this, we're playing fantasy characters in a world full of magic and dragons and all sorts of amazing things. And so, you know, we wind up going into, we just found a dam. And in this dam, the dam is overflowing and there's a huge beast on one side of it. And it's going to wind up getting over the dam, and then the flood will come and it'll wind up wiping out the town down below. And so our job is to open things up so that we can keep the dam from bursting. And so we wind up going into the dam, and we tell the dungeon master, my friend Pat, DM Darks, the dungeon master describes to us what the inside of the dam looks like. He describes, you know, you walk into this main room and here's what the walls look like, and everything is really old. And, you know, there's doors that go out this way, but then, you know, here's a table over here and here's stuff. And so now as characters, we decide, okay, what is it we're going to do? We say, all right, well, let's search through the table. Let's go through that door and see what's in the next room. In the next room, we found a miniature model of the entire dam, which, so, okay, we'd like to examine that. And by examining it, we get some clues that, hey, maybe, this little miniature model is the key to controlling the dam. Maybe it's like some sort of remote control device, for the whole thing. We don't know. We go down further inside, and as we're exploring around, we find, an ancient devil who is, trapped in a pentagram, in the basement. And, from having a conversation with him, which again is just a conversation. We ask him questions. He yells things at us. He begs and pleads for us to release him. And we, of course, decide we're not releasing the devil upon the countryside. But we get clues from him that he is the power source from the dam, for the dam. Him and, there should have been another devil on the other side, but that guy apparently got reduced to ash. And so, he's telling us that he's the power source. We kind of surmise that, oh, well, we need somebody else, something else over in that other cell, and then the two of them together will be our double D batteries that will run that little model, and then we can control the dam.
Does D stand for devil?
Yes, yes. The D batteries, devil batteries. That's exactly what those mean. So again, it's a story. It's a story. We tell what we want to do, and the dungeon master, Pat, tells us how the world reacts to us. Now, that's the basics of it, and that's the basics of pretty much all role-playing games, except that the dungeon master isn't always required. That's the traditional version, is that there's one guy who knows the whole story, one guy who has the whole behind the scenes. He essentially plays God and runs everything, and then you just play your character as you go through. Now, the trick to it and where the rules come in is occasionally you're going to do things where the results are uncertain. So, you know, I am going to fire an arrow across the room and try and hit that little lever over there, try and flip that switch from across the room with an arrow to hopefully release the gate or whatever it is that switch does. Well, can I hit it? That's a great question. So now here's where the rules come in. And you would look at my character sheet and, you know, my skill with a bow and arrow is whatever it's going to be. Let's say I have a +7, or it doesn't matter. The numbers are irrelevant at this point. We check my skill, and then the dungeon master or game master will decide how difficult that's going to be. And so I roll my dice, applying the skill to it, and then he compares it against whatever my target number is. And if I roll high enough, oh, hey, look, I hit it. And we wind up being successful. If I roll too low, oh, you just barely missed it. Or if I roll really, really badly, maybe I shoot myself in the foot or something stupid.
How do you manage that?
I'm really bad with a bow. So the point is the dice tell you, whether or not you succeed at anything. Again, anything that you try and do where the results are uncertain, you roll some dice. And in general, the simplest version of that is you roll dice, and if you get high numbers, good things happen. If you get low numbers, bad things happen. So the higher the number, the better the thing. I have a role-playing game that I wrote called Story System. And I wrote that years and years ago. But in Story System, it's essentially that you roll some dice, and you roll those dice, and if you roll really high, good things happen. If you roll really low, bad things happen. If it's kind of in the middle, well, you know, we'll make a judgment call on it. But it's fairly straightforward, and each game has its own set of rules to it. So, for example, the game I mentioned, Story System, has a really simple set of rules. Essentially, if you have a character description, and, you know, you can get bonuses or penalties based on, hey, it says here that I'm really good at diplomacy. So if I'm trying to do something diplomacy related, I get a bonus, +1, +2, whatever it's going to be. You know, it says here I'm really clumsy. So if I'm trying to do something that requires coordination, I get a penalty. And then I roll the dice, high numbers good, low numbers bad. Very simple. But those rules can get incredibly complex depending on the game. So if you're playing Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder, there's all sorts of things that go into it. You can have, for example, in Pathfinder, you have stats that describe your basic abilities. You have numbers from 1 to 20, usually, but they can be higher or lower, whatever. But you have numbers that describe your strength, your intelligence, your charisma, your whatever it is. And so you have your 6 basic stats there that all have numbers where 10 is average. Anything above that is above average. Below that is below, obviously. And then from those numbers, you have a whole range of skills that you can use, and again, it gets really, really complex, that, you know, as you go up in levels, this game has levels where, oh, you've achieved enough experience that now you're second level. That means you can now pile on some extra numbers, and you add on your hit points, and but again, all of that is just dressing around the idea that we're playing a storytelling game. We are sitting around and playing Let's Pretend with a bunch of friends. And in general, most of the games I play have a game master who guides the whole game while everyone else plays their part in it. And we just share in a story. And that's really the bottom line of it. And that's all you need to know to get yourself started in it. And it's, there are lots of games that do without the dice, and you can do without the dice in lots of ways. You know, some of them use other ways of randomizing stuff that I've seen. Role-playing games that use a deck of cards, and they have systems for drawing cards and playing cards and using those as your success. There's other games that are completely without dice or randomizer of any sort, and instead, you know, you have a number of action points or whatever it is, and when it comes time to do something, you can bid a number of points to try and, you know, whatever. I've never actually played those. I've only heard about them. Or you can have a game where you try and do something and the game master just decides what's going to happen based on your actions. I've played like that. If you were listening last week, I talked about playing Paranoia, which Paranoia has a huge rule book and a big old complex set of rules for how to play Paranoia. But in general, we play Paranoia, by email. And it's all very secretive and it's all very hush hush. And so, you know, I, as the game master, I set out, hey, here's what's going on. And then everybody sends me their messages and I compile them into a big narrative and I send each person the portion of that narrative that they can actually see, the stuff that they can experience and know what's going on. And in the past when we've played Paranoia, I always tell them that when weird stuff goes on, I'm rolling dice behind the scenes to determine how things work and how they don't. But in general, I never actually have rolled dice until this game. And now, I know those of you who have played in my games before and you're playing now and you're listening to me right now, you're going, yeah, Mike, right, sure, you're rolling dice. No, I really am. I actually rolled some dice just on this last move because somebody decided they wanted to do something that was a little tricky. And there were several ways that it could go. And the person even described to me in their email, they said, well, there's a lot of ways this could go. If I'm successful, I'm going to wind up right here trying to do this. But if I fail, well, I'm still going to try and turn it to my advantage by doing whatever. And so I thought, well, it could go a lot of ways. Let's roll some dice and see what happens. And so I rolled the dice and the number turned out, better than average. It wasn't great, but better than average. So he got most of what he wanted, but not quite. And it worked out really well. And for me, I really like the dice. I like the randomization. I think that's why I'm going to use more of them in this Paranoia game than I have in the past, you know, which is any at all, because there is a, there's a certain joy for me in seeing random numbers come up and unexpected things happen as a result. You see those random numbers and it's like, oh, I did not expect that they would fail that badly. Holy crap. Okay. Well, then what does that mean? And that's where it gets to be really fun. When they succeed unbelievably well, fail unbelievably well, or something that should have been easy for them, but they just barely miss it. Now you have to work that into the game, work that into the storyline, and figure out what that means. So it means even though as a game master, I have a story laid out ahead of time that, you know, here's the major plot points. Here's what the world looks like. It doesn't mean that they're just in here following my story from beginning to end. It doesn't mean that I know how everything's going to play out because the dice and the characters are going to make their own decisions and things are going to happen. And there have been plenty of times that I have set up a mission for my characters. I've told the players, hey, you know, here's what it is. You have to get into the castle. You have to meet this person. You have to try and get this magical staff from them, you know, whatever. I've outlined their objectives, and that's where they need to go. And so they travel out on this mission, and I expect that normally, okay, you'd do a little bit of research. You'll find out that, hey, there's this person who could let you in over here, and you could, and I have a whole trail of events that they could be following that would get them to where they need to go. But you know what? Instead, they decide that they're going to go a completely different way. And instead, they wind up finding a way to scale the back wall and break in through a magical entrance that I didn't even realize was vulnerable. And now suddenly, they're right there at the big bad guy before anything even gets started. They've made the choice to go that way. They've achieved their objectives, and they've acquired the staff, snuck out. Nobody even knew where they were there. They didn't have to go through the front door. They didn't have to face any guards. All of that other stuff that I laid out, all those other characters I designed, well, I either throw them away or I repurpose them and find a way to use them in some other different adventure later because they found a better way to do it. Or there's lots of times where you can lay out the mission for them and say, well, you've been hired to do this, and here's the ogres that are threatening you from this side, and you guys need to do something about this. And they decide, you know what? Screw this. We're leaving. We're just going to retreat and we will find a different place. We don't need to face this. We don't need to go through this fight. Why would we risk our lives? Why would we risk our family and friends when we can just leave? And that's happened before too. And we wind up, the story winds up going in a very different direction. All this stuff that I thought I had planned, I thought I had a pretty coherent narrative of where they might go. Well, you know what? Scrap all that. We're going to start from scratch because it's all about where they choose to go and what they want to do. I love role-playing games. I love them. And again, there's lots of different ways to play them, and none is any better than any other. The main determiner of whether or not you're going to have fun in a game is if you like and trust the people that you're gaming with. That's really what it comes down to. Because I also mentioned that you don't even need a game master necessarily. Because again, it's a shared storytelling experience. So as long as you trust each other, you guys can make a story together without having some overall guiding force that's developed the plot ahead of time. I don't even remember what episode it was, but my son has been doing this with his friends for years. He's 21 now. But for years, since he was in high school, him and a friend, usually it's just a one-on-one thing, someone will start a text message, and they play it all by text on their phones. Someone starts a text message that says, you know, just sets a scene and says, you know, everyone's there for the town meeting. Something weird is going on at the front. I'm standing right behind you. All right. And that's it. That's the text message. So then the person will reply with how they respond to this situation. And so they've had some of them where they set out ahead of time saying, hey, tell you what, let's start up a role-playing game, just the two of us, and it'll have to do with vampires, or it'll have to do with whatever. You know, and they decide ahead of time that it's going to be some kind of action-adventure, or it's going to be a romance, or it's going to be whatever type of story they want to tell. But then there's other times where someone just has an idea and just sends a message, just a throwaway message, and says, here's where it starts. No warning, no nothing. And however the other person replies, they can take it in whatever direction they want, and the two of them will play back and forth to create a story. It's basically a huge, long story a narrative that they've put together where, you know, in 140 characters or less, they each write a portion of the story and it moves forward. And they've done some really amazing stuff with that. And that's done just two people telling a story together. That's a real basic version of it. And in those, usually it's, I'm playing this character and you're playing that character. So this whole story is about these two individuals and how they interact. But occasionally, you know, you have to throw in some other stuff from other people and, you know, they'll just do it. They just make it up as they go. And those are really, really cool. I also have a game. I meant to take it to Gen Con with me last time. Zombie Cinema. Zombie Cinema is an awesome, awesome game that is essentially you're playing out a zombie movie and there is no game master. You set a scene and each person around the table, and we've played it with 3, 4, 5 different people at the same time. And as you go around the table, each person sets a scene and says, okay, like the one time we played it in the high school. Because two of the people playing were high school students in that school at the time. And so we said, okay, it's at the high school during a basketball game. Great. And everyone picked what kind of characters they would be. Who would they be who's at the high school during a basketball game? So we had a couple of them were players. One was a mom. One was the teacher. One was the creepy coach. You know, we had so we all picked our characters. And then so each person takes a turn setting the scene. So, okay, here's where we are, here's where everyone is, go. And then you just kind of role play. The 5 of you, 4 of you, all together just kind of interact with each other, and as you would in a zombie movie, and then things happen. And then whenever there's a conflict, okay, now suddenly there's a conflict between two players, go. We each roll dice, and whoever gets higher dice wins and gets to figure out what the narrative is for the rest of this scene. And then, okay, boom, that scene's over, move over to the next guy. You set the next scene. All right. And we wound up, every time we've done this, we have wound up telling amazing zombie stories that generally involve everybody getting eaten by zombies by the end. The thing involves this little board where after each conflict, depending on how things go, it's possible that the level of the zombie infection, will increase. And every time it increases, things get a little worse. And so in the beginning, it's weird stuff is happening and we're mostly just arguing with ourselves. Like imagine, which one was it? Was it Day of the Dead when they're trapped in the mall? So, you know, imagine that, okay, yeah, it's weird. things are kind of building up. We know we're in trouble, but we spend a lot of time arguing with each other because that's the way human beings do in a zombie movie. Until eventually more and more of the conflict becomes about just survival and us conflicting with the zombies. And it's great. And we wind up with no game master at all. We wound up telling amazing zombie stories, that play out wonderfully. And we, you know, and each one took us, you know, like an hour to play out. Those were really cool. Whereas traditional role-playing games, they can be anywhere from a one-shot game where you sit down for a couple of hours, you know, maybe three or four, and you play what's, you know, it's just a one-shot. It's a, hey, I've got a setup. You guys, we make some characters quick. We sit down, we tell this story, and then we're done. You know, we've told a story from beginning to end in one session, and that's it. Or sometimes you have one that might take a little bit longer than that. Or sometimes you have these ongoing campaigns where you're playing the same set of characters in the same continuous storyline, but it plays for years. And so the one we've been, again, the Pathfinder game we're in now, we've been playing, you know, we started off as first level characters, just novices right out of the gate, not having any idea what's going on with the world. And we got caught up in this series of events because goblins attacked the festival we were at. And so we did some investigating to help out the town and figure out what's going on with the goblins. And the whole story just kind of built from there. And each event kind of led us to clues that told us that something else was going on. And now we're caught up in this thing. And some of it's about our own survival. Some of it's about helping out the people around us. But we've been playing that game every other Thursday for 2.5 years. And we are not quite halfway through with it. So we've got another 3 years ahead of us. And it's a fantastic game. I mean, really fantastic. And it's, and that one in particular, that sounds really complex that, oh my God, you gotta come up with an ongoing storyline where everything ties together and it lasts for years and years. Yeah, it's not as, this one is a published adventure. This is the Rise of the Rune Lord series from Pathfinder. Paizo is the name of the company that puts out Pathfinder. And Rise of the Rune Lords, they give you, in six books, they give you this huge continuous story that everything ties together from beginning to end. And so your characters start off at first level, and by the end, they're probably going to be close to 20th level. They'll be huge, powerful mega wizards, and they'll, and, you know, and events will escalate up so that as they keep progressing, the challenges become progressively harder. And the books have it all laid out. And that doesn't mean that as a game master, you can just, you know, walk in, open up the books, and let's go. I know from my own game mastering experience, I know that our dungeon master has spent a lot of time reading ahead on these books and preparing stuff. And since we play online, he actually scans in the maps and has them available for us online. So that when we play, we can see the maps and we can move our little characters around on them to show where we're standing and who we're fighting and what's going on. But anyway, that I'm at this point, I'm just going to keep babbling, but, that's the gist of role-playing games. There's a lot to it. Or there can be a lot to it. But more than anything, you're just telling a story. That's all it is. And if you want to try role-playing games, my personal opinion is find a group, find someone who knows how to play, and see if you can join up with them. Right now, like Masters 8 came around asking some of the same questions on my website just a few weeks ago. And L, she used to go by the name Lucy, now she goes by L on the new boards, was just starting up a new Pathfinder game that they were playing online, and she said, hey, yeah, we've got enough characters, but if you want in, we'll make room for you, come on, join us. And so he's gotten in on that, and he's having a great time from what I can tell. I'm not in on that particular game, so I don't know the details of it. But, you know, look for people online, there are lots of ways you can get involved. Or, you know, if you're really brave, go out and buy a role-playing game and try it out. You've got, you know, five kids. You've got, you know, three or four guinea pigs still living at home that you can test this out on. I mean, look, I learned how to play role-playing games when I was 11 and 12 years old, and me and my friends had, between us, we had all the pieces of Dungeons & Dragons that we had enough books that we could put together and make a game, and we just kind of stumbled through it. We just kind of kept reading the books. We'd try playing, and we'd go, that doesn't feel right, and so we'd read some more, and we'd go, oh, that's what armor class is for. Okay, I get it now. And we'd put all the pieces together until we finally figured out how to role play. And we just kind of learned as we went. So, I mean, if you're brave, you can do that too. But depending on the size town you live in and the kind of people around you, I mean, there's always online stuff that goes on. We use Roll20 over at Roll20.com. They have an online tabletop that makes it really easy. That's what we use to play our games. And they have an active community over there that if you come by and say, hey, I'm new to role-playing games, but I'd like to try something out, they could probably slot you into an online game somewhere. Somebody would be willing to take like I say, I know they have forums. I know they have an online community. I know they're active. I'm assuming that all of these things are possible if you went over there. That's the way gaming communities are. But you know, if you have, depending again, the size of your town, your community, if you have a local gaming store that sells role-playing games, more than likely they have regular game nights. And they, you know, if they're around and if they have regular game nights, they would be more than happy to have people stop by and have new people join in. Well, most of them would be more than happy. Every now and then, like we had one, oh man, we had a gaming shop here in town that they constantly had a group of their friends that were in there. The owner was an avid gamer, and that's why he started up his own gaming shop. And then he had his group of friends that were always in there role-playing, and every time I went into that shop, I just felt like an outsider. It was just, you'd walk in and everybody there would stare at you and just watch you as you're walking around, wondering what the hell you're doing in their domain. I assume that's what they were thinking. Weird and uncomfortable. Most gaming shops are not like that, though. So, they're, like I say, lots of opportunities. Get out there and look for them if you're interested, because it's a lot of fun. Or, again, just hang out on our boards. Eventually, someone's going to start up a new game, because we do that all the time. So there will be opportunities. Anyway, that's it for my gaming table, I think. Let me hold on. Yeah, let's call that it for the gaming table, because next up, we're going to do some fingertips.
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
All right, fingertips is where I just kind of go through my my master list, and I just read off the topics and go with them. Usually I do this to clean out the master list, because I've got stuff that's been sitting here too long. But this time I'm doing it because I just hadn't really prepared anything other than preparing, talking about role-playing games for the first half of this. So, let's see what I got for fingertips. Item number one, tell people good stuff. Okay, I mentioned this ages ago, that if there are things that you appreciate in life, make sure you tell people that you appreciate them. All right, especially people who have created stuff. I say this because recently I have had some great feedback from new listeners, from old listeners, from my mom, people who have sent me a note, given me a phone call, dropped me a line just to say, hey, I am really enjoying what you're doing. Thank you so much. I can't wait to get more of this. That you can't imagine how wonderful that is to get that kind of feedback. And again, especially for someone who, I'm not asking for money. I'm not making a profit off of this. I'm doing this because I enjoy it. It's good for me, and hopefully it's enjoyable to you too. And so therefore, to get the feedback, that's all I'm asking. It's just every once in a while, you know, send me some Podomatics, ask me some questions, join in the listener betrayal, that kind of stuff. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Makes me feel great about what I'm doing. I appreciate all you guys for doing that for me. And so as a result, I mean, again, some of the other stuff out there that you enjoy, you know, if there's a way to support them monetarily, you know, for the people who set up Patreon accounts or Kickstarters or whatever, and you have a way to actually pitch in and help people out, then help them out. But if they're not asking for your money, then, you know, you can also, or even if they are asking for your money, you can still also just send them a line and just let them know, wow, I really enjoy what you're doing here. I've done that for several webcomics. I've sent emails to podcasts that I listen to and enjoy. Just tell the creators of stuff you like that you like what they're creating. Really, that's all it is. This is just a reminder that it really, really means a lot, and it really helps keep us going. Because especially when you're creating content for free, especially when you're creating content that you're not on a set schedule, it is really easy to get behind on stuff. It's really easy to put things off, and to get that little extra boost, that pick me up that says, hey, you know what? People are listening. People are watching and reading, and people do care about what you're doing and appreciate it. It's just a little extra motivation to keep going and make sure you're getting stuff done on time and make sure you're there for your fans. I really appreciate that. So again, spread that love around. This is not, again, not me begging you to let me know how well I'm doing or how much you like what I'm doing or any of that stuff, because you guys already do that for me. But go around and do it for other stuff too. Go find other people who create things you like and tell them that. I can't tell you what a world of difference that makes. Let's see. Noah Cake is the next thing on my list. And all right. Noah made a cake. Well, he and I made a cake together for the father-son cake bake for scouts. And the intent of this is you have to make a cake with your dad or father figure or some other important male in your life. And the scout and the dad make the cake together. Everything on it has to be edible. And then we bring it to our blue and gold ceremony at the end of the year, and we auction it off. And because my father-in-law, Noah's grandfather, he has something to prove. And so therefore, our cake always sells for more than anybody else's because Grandpa is always there to bid on it. And by God, he's going to make sure nobody spends more on the cake than he does. So this cake, I think, went for $135. That's a damn good cake. But the money's not the, well, the money is the important part. It's a fundraiser for scouts, and that's, and all the people there, they understand that this is not about auctioning cakes. This is not about getting baked goods. This is about raising money for scouts. And for our local scouting organization, this is not going to national, it's not going to districts, it's the money that goes directly into our troop with no middleman, and PAC. Troop is for Boy Scouts, PAC is for Cub Scouts. Anyway, it's money that goes directly to us, and it helps us with the camps and the activities and the stuff that we do locally. And so people appreciate that, and so they come in, and it makes the boys feel great that they've made the cakes and they're putting on this thing and they're a part of it. And then money comes in and it helps us all out. And it's really cool. But Noah's cake, and it was, his idea. We were going to do a puzzle piece that we had a mystery theme. It was a CSI theme, a mystery theme. And after looking at a bunch of different cakes and options and stuff, Noah decided he wanted to do the puzzle piece, which was really cool and really easy to do. You take a square cake and you cut a hole out of this side and you put it on this side as a little knob and you make up, it looks like a puzzle piece. But then, to go with it, Noah made a dozen cupcakes that went around it. And, I don't know how familiar you are with the Scout Law, but the Scout Law is, a Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. All right? 12 points of the Scout Law. And so he made 12 cupcakes, and so his little puzzle piece says, a scout is, and he spray-painted with the little icing sugar spray. He spray-painted the puzzle piece itself black, which I thought was a weird choice, but it's his cake. And then we did blue and gold cupcakes to go around it, so the puzzle piece says, a scout is, and then the 12 cupcakes each have 1 point of the Scout Law on it. It was adorable. It was really cute. And because it was a CSI theme, most of the other cakes there all did some kind of crime scene looking thing. It was all very much on the same theme. Lots of black on these cakes. And so Noah's stood out really well, and, it was original and cute, and he wound up winning for best cake. So I was super proud of Noah. He's awesome that way. And again, more than any other cake that we've ever done, I mean, I've done, from Jacob to Aiden to Eli to Noah, I have done a lot of goddamn Cub Scout cakes. Contributed more to the idea and the baking and the decorating, contributed more himself personally than any other previous cake. And I was really proud of him. He did a great job. So it was very cool. I mean, I still did a lot. Don't get me wrong. But he put in a lot of effort on it and a lot of thought. And it was very cool. Let's see. Oh, and while I'm on the subject of donations, all right, here's the gripe I have. Every year we have our blue and gold ceremony, and at blue and gold, we do our cake auction, which is our second big fundraiser of the year. First, we sell popcorn, then we do the cake auction, and then that's it. But districts, the district organization also has a fundraiser, which used to be called Friends of Scouting. I don't know what it's called anymore, where they come around and they just ask straight up for donations. And the problem is they always come and ask for donations at the blue and gold ceremony. This is our big end of year party. And so they show up there where we've just done a cake auction and we've got people who are spending, you know, $60, $80, $150 on a cake, as a donation to our local scouts. And then immediately after they get done with that, someone from Friends of Scouting stands up and says, "Hey, all right. I know you just had your checkbooks open, but how about you give some money to us too?" And it's like, just horrible timing. Just horrible timing that they're asking for a donation right after these people just gave money. And so I've always disliked that, but now they've made it even worse. This is my work does this as well. You have these charity donation programs. We have through my workplace, we have the option of giving to this United Charities campaign. And if you give money, the money will be deducted directly from your paycheck. So it's automatically, everything's kept track of for you. And then it's divided up among whatever charities you decide your money's going to go to. And if you decide not to give to charity, they still want you to return the form and just make sure that on the outside of the envelope, they have a spot on the outside of the envelope where you put in your name and the amount that you're giving. Meaning, if I don't want to give anything, I have to fill out the envelope and write Mike Jones on the outside of it with a zero. And then I have to submit that so that the people all handling it all get to see my name and how much money I'm choosing to donate, which is nothing. It's an intimidation tactic is what it is. And I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. And so now Friends of Scouting did the exact same thing. She comes around, she is asking for money, and she gives us these forms, and she winds up saying, okay, but even if you're not going to give any money, we would appreciate it if you just fill out the form. You can just write zero on the bottom of it and just turn that in. No, I am not. How dare you? I find it's bullying is what it is. I don't like it. Why would you do that to people? I mean, I know why they do it to people. They do that to people because people don't want to turn in a form that says zero on it. They don't want to look like cheapskates. So therefore people will give, at least a little something because they don't want to look. No, screw that. I put zero on it and turn it in. If I'm going to give to charity, I'll give to charity. You don't have to blackmail me into it. That's what I'm saying. Am I a little bitter? I think I might be. Let's see. Oh, all right. Next one. You've heard me many times when I do my my meta talk section at the beginning of the podcast, and I talk about pulling back the curtain a little bit and giving a behind the scenes look, talking about the podcast. Okay, but that's my phrase for it, is pulling back the curtain. All right, it's a Wizard of Oz reference. You're taking a look at the man behind the curtain. You're seeing how the sausage is made. It's a little inside baseball. There's a lot of phrases for this, and I just heard a brand new one for that kind of. I'm listening to the 538 podcast, and they're talking about polling and how they particularly gather their information for polling and how they put that stuff together. And Nate Silver, who is the head of 538, Nate Silver on this podcast said, as they're talking about the inner workings of their polling structure, he says, well, if I could open the kimono for just a little bit here, it's such a vivid picture. The open the kimono. That's a great image. What an awesome metaphor for getting the behind the scenes look, the inner workings, how the sausage is made. Okay, maybe that's a bad visual. But to me, I was so struck by it that I heard him say that. I pulled my car over to the side of the road so I could pull out this notebook and write down the words, open the kimono, Nate Silver, because I didn't want to forget that for the podcast. I just thought it was great. Let's see, what else do I got here? I've got Irish Fan with what is an RPG. Yep, already did that one. And all right, Winnie Harlow. Winnie Harlow, her real name, Chantel Young Brown, but she goes by, her modeling name is Winnie Harlow. She is currently my avatar. I picked out badass avatars, and we do a random avatar program on my website, and this time the theme was badass. And so there's all sorts of badass pictures in there. One of them is Winnie Harlow, who I put into the mix simply because I find her incredibly cool. There's something about her. She is a supermodel she's a black woman, but she has vitiligo, which means that her skin loses pigment in areas. So she has just patches of white all across her body and in very distinctive, stark patterns on her face, on her arms, on her torso, everywhere. And so she is this beautiful chocolate brown on half of her body and this stark, almost albino white on the rest of it. And it is just, it's really cool. And the fact that she has this and chooses to be a supermodel and she puts herself out there, and I've seen her in interviews and I've heard her, you know, talking to young people who also have vitiligo, and just the courage it takes to get to that position, which, I mean, she's now, I mean, she's a supermodel and she's gorgeous and she has all sorts of amazing self-confidence. But she talks about how long it took her to get to that level of confidence, to be that strong and that proud of herself, in spite of, what other people might say, the bullying that she received in school and the other issues throughout her life. And to get to this point, I just find that amazing. And so I included her in the badass avatars, and then I wound up getting her avatar as my own. I just thought that was the coolest, absolutely coolest. There's just something about her. I'm just a little bit obsessed with her image. I find her stunning. It's just absolutely stunning and endlessly fascinating. More than that, she's also, because of the very distinctive pattern of black and white on her face, there are people who have decided to mimic that using makeup. It's usually young white women who then apply brown makeup to parts of their face and then leave the rest of it white, and it mimics Winnie Harlow's skin patterns. And they have been accused of being racist because they're putting on blackface. And they're like, no, this is specifically, it's almost like a cosplay. It's almost it's a tribute to Winnie Harlow. And Winnie Harlow herself has said, there's nothing offensive about that. I find this really actually very cool and endearing and all this. She thinks it's cool. But again, is she allowed to be the judge of what's racist for everybody else? Maybe not. I personally, I think it's a little weird, but it's also harmless. But it's just odd. And also, I have a sister-in-law who has vitiligo, and hers is not, you know, she's a white woman, so, who was, fairly pale to start with, so it's not as striking, and she mostly, as a result of it, she keeps herself out of the sun most of the time, so she's usually fairly pale, anyway, but there are times during the summer, you know, when they've been camping for a couple of weeks or whatever, she'll start getting some sun, and it starts to stand out even more, and it's just, again, something I find fascinating, just odd. So anyway, that was my story of Winnie Harlow, and that's the last thing I have on my master list. This was going to be a short podcast, and I'm already 45 minutes into it. I can't believe you guys let me do this. I'm supposed to be done quick. You know what? Screw it. Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me have on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my brand new spanking new awesome forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. See, first half is the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. That's all for me. Second half, we do Pod-O-Matic and listener betrayal. That's all for you guys. So whatever you want me to talk about. And the very first item we have here is 92. And Aiden heard the Pod-O-Matic go off, so here he comes. 92 is from Talvin. Talvin says, Norse god F. Mary Kill. Thor, Odin, Loki.
Well, I choose Loki to marry because he just sounds like a whole lot of fun.
You would.
Thor for my one night because, have you seen Chris Hemsworth? I guess I'd kill Odin because, I mean, he's already dead.
All right.
Is that spoilery?
Hey, no.
Okay.
No, it wasn't that good a movie anyway. I would probably, oh, man. Yeah, you know what? I was going to say I'd probably marry Thor and have my one night with Loki, but Thor seems so dull. To be married to him forever?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, you know what?
Until you die. He'll go on.
Right. Yeah, he'll just move on. Oh, that Thor. But yeah, I'm going to have to go with Aiden. I will marry Loki because, that would be a trip. He would be fun forever. And then Thor, yeah, Chris Hemsworth, one night, we got that. And sure enough, yeah, Odin can die. That's fine. We'll be good with that. 95. Let me mark these.
What I like is that there was no question that we both thought Odin would be the one we killed.
Yeah, well.
There was never a question.
Well, I considered marrying him because, you know, he is the king of all gods and he's ultra powerful and thus he would be the most powerful and wealthiest among them, but
They're all gods. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like the son of Odin is going to be that much less, you know, rich, powerful, awesome, whatever. No, it at this point, it just comes down to interesting. I think Loki's got that one.
Anyway, 95.
95 is from Mrs. Darks. And she says, now that you have played some cooperative board games and card games, which do you prefer, co-op or adversarial? Good question. What about you, Aiden?
I like adversarial because it's, you know, classic. I haven't played many co-op games.
Right.
I mean, Castle Panic's pretty much it.
And Pandemic.
Well, Pandemic, but I played that once.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Me personally, I like them both a lot, and I like having the option of playing both of them. If I have to pick just one, I am going to pick adversarial. I like a good trash talk. I like getting to watch people fail miserably and get to giggle at it and just have a fun time. I love pulling out that surprise win over your adversaries, or suddenly tripping yourself up and like playing Flux. Oh, it's so much fun playing Flux and to be, you know, you're on a roll and you're playing cards and you've got it all worked out. And then finally, oh crap, you wind up having to play a card that lets someone else win. They've stumbled into a win by accident and it's all your fault. I love those moments, and winning, losing makes no difference to me. I just like the give and take of it. I like the interactions that go along with it. I like the co-op games as well. And again, trying to talk these guys into playing some Pandemic with me, but next game night, we'll get that. Which, when is the next game night? It's on your graduation. Do I get to go to the next game night? No. Thanks a lot. I wish you weren't graduating.
We have like three game nights over the summer, though.
Yeah, I don't care. I want the next one. How dare you graduate?
I'll make sure Chris is at the ones in the summer.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You've got people to bring along.
I've gotten everyone at work to call her Killer now.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, wouldn't you know, we showed up at game night last time, and there was someone Aiden works with, and it was really cool. And actually, I think Jacob might be stopping by for some of them. And so, yeah, it'll be a cool time. Anyway. All right. I'm not taking it.
No. You got to use finesse.
87. All right. It kept, the 9 was stuck. It kept giving me 90, 90, 90. So, 87 is from Kyle. And Kyle says, would rather lose your left leg above the knee, okay, left leg above the knee, or your fingers on your left hand, but you get to keep the thumb.
Now, okay, wait, well, hold on. Whoa. So I get to keep everything below the knee, though.
No. Well, you can keep it, like, in a box somewhere.
Use it as a weapon?
Yes. No. It says here you've lost it. You don't know where you left it. So,
but it only says above the knee.
Shut up. So, I'm clearly going to lose my leg. I don't even see how this one's a choice.
You can't roll dice without fingers. Jeez.
Right. Well, I would still have fingers on this hand to write with, or to roll with, write with. But, yeah, I mean, I'd have to relearn how to type. I'd have to... No. Look... I do too much online, too much that's cerebral, too much that I need my hands for.
Typing up these questions, typing up the forums.
Right, exactly.
These scripts.
Whereas if I lose my leg above the knee, I wind up getting a prosthetic, which is not going to be perfect, but it'll be pretty darn good. And it gives me an excuse not to do physical activity, which, I mean, obviously I didn't need an excuse.
And I lose my leg too.
But now I have a good one. So, no, too late. 05. And this is going to be the end of it because we got to get to listener betrayal yet, dude.
Oh, one more.
No, I went way too long on the beginning. So we can't. This is from Ronster. Ronster says, have you read any of the, Brian Jacques books about the Redwall series? Yes, I have read Redwall. And, I had some problems with it. It's exciting as an adventure story, but ultimately, and for those of you who aren't familiar with Redwall, Redwall is a bunch of forest creatures. The main characters are mice, at least in the books I read. But there's all sorts of forest creatures, and they talk and they use tools and carry weapons and armor, and they have adventures, and et cetera, et cetera. And my problem with it is, as kids' books aimed at young kids, I got through the first couple of them, and the plots always wound up with, there was all sorts of thinky stuff that went on, but ultimately the solution to every problem seemed to be stick a sword in it. And to that, I had some issues. And it's not as, and maybe that's hypocritical because there's lots of books written for, teens and adults that, adventure stories that also have the exact same solution of stick a sword in it. But that's really what it came down to with Redwall, is that ultimately, there's puzzles to be solved and there's stuff to do. But in the end, really, you just have to stab it until it's dead, and then that's how you win, and then that's how everything becomes okay. And maybe the rest of the Redwall series becomes more nuanced and complex than that, but after I read the first couple, I was kind of turned off to it. They were exciting, they were fun, but I was kind of hoping for a little bit more. They inspired me for a lot of things, and especially gaming stuff that I put together, but ultimately, not perfect. 19.
Woo, we got another one in.
Yeah, well, because you rang it. So 19 is...
So if I keep doing this, we can go forever?
19 is from Humongous. And Humongous says, if you could take spice to fold space, would you do it? This is a Dune question for those of you who don't know what spice is. I don't remember if I want to take spice or not. I saw the movie when it came out. I read the book before the movie came out, and in fact, I read the entire series, and I only barely remember them because that was high school, and that was 25 years ago, almost 30 years ago, and I don't remember the details, but for some reason, I'm thinking that spice ultimately had some negative effects as well, and I can't remember enough to know if I want to. So you know what? I'm just gonna say no. Just say no. That's probably the best way to
say no to spice.
Say no to spice. I will lay you money. Hold on. Let me pause. I bet we can find an online graphic that tells us to say no to spice. Just a second. Wow. That was tragically disappointing. When I say just say no to spice, all I get is tons and tons of graphics about saying no to pumpkin spice. So then I say, okay, Dune, just say no to spice. And now I get graphics of Dune saying the pumpkin spice must flow. Pumpkin spice rules these memes. There's no room here for just say no to spice. So sad. Okay, we're done. GLaDOS, you take over. Give them a summary of this week's episode. I'm going to go put together the listener betrayal.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use as bumpers on this podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. I want instructions on making your own pocket mod, which I'm not even using anymore, but I love my pocket mods anyway. Pocketmod.com. And they'll give you instructions for printing and folding. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, recommend it to your friends. Just give me some word of mouth. Spread it around. If you enjoy it, please let other people enjoy it. Remember, I am always looking for your listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for my Podomatic. Watch every week for listener betrayal. And if you've got a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, if you've got a new co-host for me, tell me what Nerd Pride Radio smells like. Save me all of that grueling research. I'll put it in my podcast.
Do you really need research for how you smell?
Yeah. People, I haven't done any of those on my own in the last several episodes. Ronster and Kaz and Kyle and other people.
Well, I'm just saying, shouldn't you know how you smell?
No. I need them to tell me. And, last week I smelled like grandpa's pipe smoke. It was pretty cool. All right. My grandpa's pipe smoke. Your grandpa doesn't smoke a pipe. Anyway, my contact info, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me, as usual, is you come over to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there. Send me a message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We really will. Trust me on this, Irish fan. It's going to happen. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. At the beginning of every cast, I go out online, my website, Facebook, and I post up that I am recording, and anything that you guys say during the intervening time, I will put right here at the end of the podcast. So, starting with Facebook, let's see. My first one, oh my God, there's a lot of them. The first one is from Akiva. Akiva says, if all the cool kids are doing it, then clearly I'm not welcome. Oh, that's so sad. But that the whole point is if you do it, you become one of the cool kids. How are you not getting this? You really, you need to join us. Oh, I see.
Wait, you're the cool kids?
Well, I just realized why he's doing that. I thought this was out of nowhere. I forgot. Up at the top. Listener betrayal time. I'm recording. And then blah, blah, blah. Come on. You know you want to. All the cool kids are doing it. No. Akiva, you are always welcome here. We wouldn't have a podcast without you. In fact, I've had probably 130 podcasts that have had nothing to do with you. Shit. All of them shit. Only the ones with you in them. Those are the ones that are worthwhile. You need to keep coming back, man. And then the next one is from Masters 8. Master says, or the Master, as he's going by now on my forums. Master says, yay, I didn't miss it. Okay, now I gotta think of something clever. Oof, well, that wasn't it. All right, let's try the next one. This one's also from Master. It says, if you could eat whatever you wanted for the rest of your life, doesn't have to be the same thing, and you could have anything at any time, but you have no teeth and have to eat it all as a smoothie, would you? No, look, if that's my option, I would hate that, but...
Think of how much time you could save for typing.
On the other hand, look, I don't want to lose all my teeth. But if you're going to tell me I have to take all of my food in smoothie form for the rest of my life, I actually could get by on that. I have no problem with that because I'm a simple man. And I would be really disgusted with the idea of, you know, dumping my McDonald's value meal into a blender and making a smoothie out of it.
And meatballs.
Yeah, that would be, there's a lot of things that would be super nasty. I'm not thrilled at the idea.
Tortellini and meatball might be good as a smoothie.
But on the other hand, look, every morning for breakfast, I have a SlimFast shake. And I say shake because that's how they describe it, but it's just, you know, milk with vanilla flavored powder in it that has all sorts of nutritional supplements in it. And you say SlimFast, but Mike, you're not fat. Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Actually, it's because I would prefer instant breakfast, but I look at the information on them, and instant breakfast and SlimFast are nutritionally pretty much equivalent, and SlimFast is super cheap in comparison to instant breakfast. So therefore,
because you're not fat, you're just a cheapskate.
Yes, I'm fat, but I'm also cheap. When I was a kid, my mom used to buy instant breakfast for us on a regular basis, and I loved having it in the house. Oh my God, that stuff is so good. And so every morning, you know, I go in and I do, because I'm old, I do my Metamucil, and then I also do my SlimFast, and that's how I have breakfast. 200 calories, I'm out the door, and I really like it. I could do that. I mean, if I had a decent way of keeping milk at work without it going bad, because, you know, I just don't drink it fast enough at work, I would also do that for lunch. I would be perfectly happy with a shake for breakfast, another one for lunch, and then a healthy meal at dinner. That's the SlimFast commercials, right? I'm there. But I don't do well with milk at work. It doesn't, again, I wind up, once I have it at work, I don't go through it. And then, you know, something happens, I'm not drinking it, and then it just goes bad. And I hate to waste milk. So anyway, next one's from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, I had an all day meeting yesterday on a Saturday. Seriously? Oh, that sounds terrible. All C. Elegans talks. That's a worm. I'm telling Aiden that C. Elegans is a worm. Obviously, you listeners all already knew that because you're super smart like that. I was just informing Aiden. So you guys can now feel superior because he didn't know that already. In order to keep alert, I wrote a lot of Podomatics. A lot. 70 to be exact. I'll type them up soon. oh, Sarah Beth's going to be the winner. That's awesome.
We're going to have an all Sarah Beth automatic.
That's what we did with Zimney. And then Master says, dang, I don't think I could even come up with 70 different topics. Oh, trust me. Here's the thing. When the huge lists come in like that, people who send me 30, 40, 50 at a time, I have had at least three times that I know for sure that the question was, what is your shoe size? Which, it's a 12. But that question comes up a lot because eventually they've written 30 of them, but they want to keep going. And so some of them get a little repetitive.
But we do not discourage repeat questions.
No, we don't.
I say we because I'm part of the Podomatic.
Right, because those of you who didn't get in on the first time I was asked what my favorite die is, and it's a die 12, by the way, but if you missed it the first time, I'm more than happy to say it again. I repeat myself all the time. But yeah, Master says, I don't even think I can come up with 70 topics. Sarah Beth replies, yeah, it was a really long day. And then Master, just to rub it in that he wasn't stuck in meetings all day, says, well, my wife and I went on a road trip all day yesterday. It was great. Oh, man.
Thanks, Master.
Yeah. Yeah, just rub her face in it. Jeez. So mean. And Nellie. Hi, Nellie. Nellie says, I am so excited to paint a mini for you. I will be posting about it on my blog, Smashing the Patriarchy. The Patriarchy.
That's brilliant.
That's really cute. What's your favorite flavor of popsicle? Red.
Purple. Grape. Nothing.
Red.
What?
Red.
You can't.
Any red popsicle is going to be my favorite flavor. Unless somehow it's just a dark pink and it winds up being watermelon, that's a little gross. But,
okay. Do it upsets me?
Red, generally cherry, but.
The only thing I can't stand.
What?
Is when you get a pack of popsicles and some of the yellows are lemon and some of the yellows are banana.
Ooh, yeah, well, or lemon versus pineapple. Lemon versus. Yeah.
Or when they just completely screw you over and it's just pineapple and banana straight through.
Look. Dude, when I was a kid, green meant lime.
Oh,
I loved.
Dude, give me a lime popsicle.
Right. Green always meant lime when I was a kid. Now, green means sour apple. Oh,
like Skittles.
Right. Skittles changed over to green apple.
I could go on a half hour rant about green Skittles.
Skittles are very important to him. But anyway, for those of you who are not familiar, which would be none of you except for me and Nelly, Nelly is painting a miniature of my character Dothan from my Pathfinder game, and she's painting it for me, and I am so excited by the idea. Last night she even offered to give me a sneak preview of it, and I said, no, surprise me. I would much rather be surprised. So I'm excited to see how it comes out. This sounds great. Master says, you ran long tonight. I like it. Yeah, we're running a little bit long, but not too bad. So, all right, that's it for Facebook.
I always run long.
That is so wildly inappropriate. I am ashamed of you. I can't believe you're even here on my podcast with me.
For those of you who couldn't see it, I did my hero pose when I said it too.
No, that's true. He did. He's Superman, hands on his hips, kind of head tilted, looking obliquely off at the sun, or I don't know what Superman stares into when he does that pose.
He's trying to absorb its yellow energy through his eyes.
I am over at my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and let me post a reply.
That is a great avatar.
I was just talking about that. You weren't here for that. Yeah, that's Winnie Harlow.
I know who Winnie Harlow is. Don't you
whom
even
I,
try.
Whom I love. And let's see. Done. All right. And submit. And who's sending me private messages now? They know I'm recording. You know I'm busy, people. What's the matter? All right, guys. Should I go see what the private message is?
And yes, absolutely.
All right, and then whatever it is, I'll read it off, even if it's some embarrassing confession from someone who desperately needs my help.
Answer to the riddle.
Ooh, answer to the riddle. Oh, darn it. All right, fine. We won't give away the riddle. I assume that's coming up over here. So let's go
wow,
forums.
Wow, great timing for that message then.
All right, let's get over here. And listener betrayal.
Didn't you open it in a new tab?
No, but then I went up to the messages. I left this one behind. So, all right, here we go. Listener Betrayal 135. That's us. And it says, Master, he says, I am everywhere. Time for a riddle. The answer will be in your PM box. See, if I had come here first, I would have realized what that was.
And you would be even great if you read that, and then immediately the thing popped up.
All right, three gods, A, B, and C, are called. They are called, in no particular order, true, false, and random. True always speaks truly, false always speaks falsely, but whether random speaks truly or falsely is completely random. Okay, your task is to determine the identities of A, B, and C by asking three yes or no questions. Each question must be put to exactly one god. Gods understand English, but will answer all questions in their own language, in which the words for yes or no are da and ya. All right, fine. In some order, but you don't know which one means which. Oh, no, look. All right. Here's the deal. Did I do this on the podcast last week? I can't remember. You know what? Yeah, maybe I'll skip this. Should we just go straight to the answer?
Yeah. Because all right, this is going to take a long time, and we're already over.
Yeah. Because I... Oh,
don't
man.
You already have it in the other tab?
Yes, I have it in another tab. God darn it. I can't believe I did that. All right, hold on. Says, oh, no. All right. No, you know what? I am not going to look at the answer.
You know what? No.
I'm going to solve it, and I will talk about it later, because I actually want to work out the logic to it. So,
for those of you listening, now you have to. You'll make a thread where they're going to post their answers, and then eventually you'll post the real answer.
Oh, man. All right, hold on. Except that, see, when I say that, that means I actually have to do that.
Right. Well, now I've said it, so now you must do
it. I'm kind of lazy. That's what I was trying to think of earlier. I can't remember if I did it last week or not, but Sir Mix-a-Lot likes big butts, and he cannot lie. His twin brother hates big butts and cannot tell the truth. You only get to ask one of them a question. So, see, that's...
I got it.
Okay. And I'm pretty sure Jacob gave me that one right after he gave me the Fight Club one, which I know I used last week. But I can't remember if I used the Mix-a-Lot one. If I did, I'm sorry for repeating myself. I forget sometimes. All right. You know what? Let's skip Master's Logic Problem because it's way too long.
And then he'll
for
remember
right
to
here.
Put up the thread later.
And then I'm sure I'll remember to put up that thread later. If I don't, Master will put it up. He's
then,
that kind of guy.
And then I'll keep bugging him until he does or until Master does. So.
Akiva says, if I post on both the forums and on Facebook, will it bring about harmonic convergence? No, it won't. The last time there was a true harmonic convergence, I just saw this. And again, true harmonic convergence is not something that doesn't actually happen. But the closest one we had was, I believe, in 1352 BC. I just saw this. Where
for those in the audience who don't know,
all of the visible planets in 1352 BC, so that would have been the moon and then five visible planets, all of them were within about a 10-degree arc in the sky, all of them grouped together in like almost a perfect straight line of these planets going out into the solar system. A harmonic convergence would be, if I remember correctly, the planetary alignment. There was a big deal about it because we had a fairly close pass, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, something like that. But it turns out it wasn't even nearly as close as that one in 1352 BC. So, and if harmonic convergence means something else, then I'm an idiot. Sorry about that, Akiva. No, unfortunately, the harmonic convergence is brought about simply by the motions of the planets, which are going to continue on their predetermined paths,
whoa.
Whether you post anything on the internet or not. So,
how
just
do
happens.
You know that your forums don't control the speed at which the planets rotate?
Because I didn't have the extra $20 a month for that option.
Oh.
So, next. Master says, no, but you might win the thread. Hey, harmonic convergence can only happen if you post on three mediums, but alas, Mike has stopped using Twitter. Oh, that's clever. I appreciate that one. Oh, next one's from Kaz. This week, tell us what action figure or collectible vinyl toy you would most like to own.
My Little Pony, straight up. I'm kidding, of course.
No, you're not.
I'm not as big into it as I used to be.
The most valuable one? I don't know. I'm not much into collectibles other than, you know, I think they're cute and I like having them around, but I don't, they're not terribly important to me.
Whoa.
Okay, go ahead.
Then what have we been giving you those little Lego buildings for?
Well, that's not a collectible miniature. That's not an action figure. That's Legos.
It's collectible.
Those are nanoblocks.
It just says, or collect, oh.
Yeah, see, exactly.
I gotta read fine print.
Exactly. You know what? I wouldn't mind having a set of, of Serenity figures. In fact, what I would really like, I'd like a Wash figure from Serenity. And then next to it, I would also like to have replicas of the dinosaurs he was using to fight each other on the show. And that would be super cool. So I could have Wash surrounded by the two dinosaurs. I think that would be really, really awesome. So, but that's just me. From Eliahad, it says, Zerangel? What do you mean Zerangel with a question mark? You mean Zerangel!
Zerangel!
Thank you. Kaz, before you just read this, this is a voice request. I want you to, okay. He wants me to grunt like a zombie and say brains in my hungriest zombie voice.
Pick me!
Well, go ahead.
Brains!
That's not bad.
Brains!
That's more of a Frankenstein, really, but it's not bad.
Hey, Frankenstein wants some brains.
Finally, they picked an impression I can actually do. Done! That's it. We've reached the end of the episode. You guys have been awesome. Thank you so much for your participation. Thank you for coming around. Thank you for making my new forums really successful and making me feel like I'm doing something cool. You guys are awesome. I love you all. I will see you next week. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodbye.
Say goodnight, R2. Goodnight, everybody.